audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 1 to 6 of Surah At-Tin, recited by Brother Hamed Shaker Nejad. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Before we go and talk about the tajweed and the riwayat and qira'at that were used in this recitation, I want to talk about something that a lot of people talk about concerning Brother Hamed Shaker Nejad. A lot of people say that the way that he recites the Quran is very similar to an Egyptian reciter. And we have few Iranian reciters that could recite the Quran similar to Egyptian reciters. I'll talk about it. So what factors are involved for, you know, sounding like an Egyptian reciter? The first one is obviously tajweed. You have to have really good tajweed. The second point is you have to have a really good voice, a voice that is, you know, it characterizes a recitation of the Quran. We want a very powerful voice.
With all three registers.
Yeah, all three registers. And mostly the sound should come from the chest, you know?
To be powerful,
actually. Yeah. We don't want too much of the head voice, okay? You know, the head is different. We want it in the chest. This is one point, the voice. The third point is the use of maqamat, alhan, in a way that is similar to the Egyptians. And finally, what is really important, probably the most important, is fasaha, the way of pronouncing fatha and alif al-mad. Of course, this is not just the only thing that relates to fasaha. There are other aspects as well, but the most important one is the fatha and aliful med. Hamed Shaker Nejad, he pronounces the fathas and aliful meds very well. Mm-hmm. He has good tajweed. His voice is excellent, and the way that he uses the maqamat and alhan is excellent. Also, he uses the qira'at. So, this is what makes a person resemble and sound like an Egyptian reciter.
Actually, it's because he has practiced a lot.
Since he was a kid, since he was a really young child, he would recite the Quran. He would listen a lot to the recitation of the Quran.
Practice makes right.
Yeah. And especially at that age, you know, that's like the age where if you listen to a language and try to learn a language and at a very early age, you will sound like the native speaker of that language.
That's right.
And anyway, so this was about Hamed Shaker Nejad, and now the
recitation itself.
Yeah. Wattini was Zaytun. We have two sun letters. We have a ta and we have a zay. Wattini, the lam sakin is not pronounced. Wattini was Zaytun. The zay is also a sun letter. The first one is ta is a plosive.
Yes.
It's a stop, an oral stop. So
it should be pronounced without aspiration.
The ta should be without aspiration. And also it's, we have the shortest timing. We quickly pronounce it. Wattini. We don't spend too much time on pronouncing ta. But what about zay? Wazaytun. We hold the za a little bit. We spend more time pronouncing
the za. It's weak fricative,
actually. Because it's a weak fricative.
Yeah. So it has actually the longest timing.
It has the longest timing, exactly. Well, turi sinin, the ta has tafkhim at a moderate level. Ra has tarqiq. Now, the different riwayat that were used by Hamed Shaker, he first began with warsh. وَهَذَا الْبَلَدِ لَمِينَ وَهَذَا الْبَلَدِ لَمِينَ. This is called naql, where the haraka of the letter, which is after a sakin letter, goes back to the sakin letter, and that sakin letter gets the fatha or whatever vowel that is after the sakin letter. And the second time, he recited the fourth verse. He recited it twice. The first one was in The first time was in Warsh, the second time was in Khalaf and Hamza. لَقَدْ خَلَقُنَا الْإِنسَانَ. We have
sect.
فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. Again, we have another sect where the long vowel is pronounced and then sect and then the rest of the verse.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
That you could be here with me now. I've overcome the demons inside. I keep hearing your voice late at night. Telling me gotta fight for your right. But now I'm stronger. I'm so much stronger. No more run, not any longer. But now I'm stronger. And finally I can say that I'm not afraid. Yeah. I'm gonna
Have a good time. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. The Islamic world produced the first skilled, specially trained pharmacists who made their own medicines and worked closely with medical doctors and physicians. A 13th century Islamic writer described the circulation of blood inside the human body some 400 years before this was discovered in Europe. One famous hadith Islamic saying is, Allah is beautiful and loves beauty. Beauty has always been, therefore, very important to Muslims and develops in the virtual arts such as architecture, calligraphy, painting, textile, metalwork, and ceramists were encouraged. Greetings once again, dear listeners, and thank you very much for listening to Iran Radio, coming to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Let's take a quick look at what's coming up next on today's broadcast. We begin with A to Z of Life. After that, we present a specially selected edition of Radio Productions. Then stay tuned for Foresight, hosted by Sayyid Shahriyar Naqvi. This enlightening program features prominent English-speaking scholars from across the Islamic world, focusing on the practical dimensions of worship and servitude to Allah, all within the context of modern-day challenges. It's an invitation to explore the intersection of faith and real-life responsibility. And finally, we bring you Ulama's speech. Coming up next, A to Z of Life. Stay with us. There is much to discover.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, what is modesty? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on Iron Being Shredder with me, Sister Zainab. And look, modesty is something that for sure I've talked about, and it is also something that again and again is very topical. So whether we're in a Muslim-majority country, outside of a Muslim-majority country, now for us as Muslims, it's something that is a topic that we sort of need to consider much more in a sense. And modesty, obviously modesty is not just a particular way of dressing. Modesty concerns our behavior. Modesty concerns maybe how we mix with other people who are, for example, not on mahram. Modesty concerns how we, the sorts of words we say, whether we use bad words when we're speaking with other people. So all this sort of comes into it. Modesty can also be, in a sense, whether we are have airs of superiority or arrogance towards others. So there's also an element of humility that comes in there. But maybe just to sort of give you an idea of some of the things we could be talking about, I'll just mention something from life of one of the famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, by the name of Ibrahim Hadi. So as an example, so Ibrahim Hadi always lowered his gaze. So even when there was a woman that came to his family house to visit, for example, with his mother, he would look down And to some extent, people, and he was very protective of the women in his house. So, for example, I've read that people didn't even realize that he had a sister until afterwards, because he was very protective that his sister would sort of, in a sense, be sort of sheltered and not exposed to having to meet with sort of non-mahram in the house. So, and there's other aspects here. So what else can we say about modesty? Welcome back to AIDS Ed here on Iron Wings Radio, me sister Zainab. And so I've just sketched out some of the things that immediately come to mind when we're talking about modesty. I've given the example of Ibrahim Hadi, who was very careful towards sort of women who came visiting his mother and his family house, for example, and would always lower his gaze. And, you know, and then there's the other aspect to modesty, because, you know, when it comes to the topic of modesty, sometimes we can also rush to assumptions, because we could, for example, rush to assumptions that if someone's dressed in a particular way, maybe they're more modest, and maybe some of us are even judgmental. And this is obviously one of the things I want to just sort of map out that we need to be aware of. If we think too much of ourselves, too highly of ourselves, if, for example, we are observing modesty in our dress and in our speech, we cannot at the same time sort of elevate ourselves, put ourselves on a pillar that we are an example of modesty, and that we sort of look at some other people. And this is maybe especially woman to woman. We cannot start to make assumptions about other women. So let's say a typical thing would be we see a woman, maybe our friends, maybe someone in our family or someone on the street. We observe that for example, do not wear hijab the way we do. Maybe we even observe that they're wearing no hijab. That's possible, depending on the country we're in. Anyway, and then sometimes we rush to the assumption that because they're not wearing such and such, that has then an implication for their character. And I'll just mention an example. So I know that I did once observe a woman who didn't really have special hijab of any kind, very little hijab, and, you know, maybe we would think, oh, that's probably not a very religious person. But I observed that woman go into a sort of a smaller shrine, also called an imamzada, for I think it was the midday and afternoon prayers. And yeah, so we have to be very careful. And this is obviously a thing, so we have the beautiful aspect of being modest, but we then also have to be very aware that we don't fall into other dangers. So what we are doing is very good, but we also need to focus on ourselves and not sort of assume or judge things about others. So inshallah, this is just a reminder for all of us. And I'd say especially as women. And that was it for today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of AIDS Ed here on Iron Wings Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
is located next to one of Iran's main north-south transit corridors. Many people driving along this road also pay a visit to this historic city. And one of the reasons is to eat. So my curiosity dragged me all the way to downtown Qazvin to find out more about food culture in this city.
It is time to get ready for a festival of color and flavor. Everyone's invited. In the city's historic caravanserai lies a kitchen where they turn ingredients into magic. If there is one place you should forget about your diet, it would be right here.
If you're on a gastronomic journey across Iran, you would easily be able to find Iran's national dishes in every restaurant on your way. But to get a taste of more folklore food, sometimes you have to travel to particular areas of the country, such as Qazvin City. I suggest we take a look into the kitchen to see what Qazvini cuisine is all about.
Traditional Qazvini foods are made of some of the best ingredients in the world. It's a pity we can't show you the whole process of preparing all these dishes due to our short program. Only looking at each dish is enough to awaken that dragon in your belly.
In addition to exclusive dishes, the people in this city pay a lot of attention to what they drink. That's why traditional drinks made of herbs and seeds are extremely popular here.
In the old times, bathing had its own traditions. One of them was to treat yourself with traditional drinks called sharbat and brewed herbs after you came out of the bath. That was when the owner of the Sharbat house prescribed you a drink that would help you shape up after a long bath. He did this by simply looking at the color of your face.
Our journey would not be complete without tasting the very special sweets and pastries of Qazvin City. What I have here in front of me is called baklava or baklava. It's a bomb of energy and happiness, the richest and the most outstanding edible souvenir of Qazvin City. I'm gonna have one.
To the people in Qazvin, baklava is pride. It is so important that no visitor leaves a city without it. In this old confectionery, they've been baking baklava for three generations. In every corner of this country, you're guaranteed a warm and friendly hospitality. Iran, the land of endless flavors and new experiences. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
I'm a huge fan of the rustic style, and I just love any sort of object that seems to have aged gracefully. Now, today we're going to meet a very special someone whom I'd like to call a magician, a sorcerer, an alchemist who turns an ordinary object into an antique. So, if you love anything a little bit rusty and crusty, then follow me inside. Abracadabra.
Ismail Reza Mohammadi is passionate about collecting signs from the past and has been using the art of patina to create and capture that look. With a sculpting background, several years' experience in painting and photography, coupled with a love for history and Iran's culture and heritage, he's been involved in countless revamps of decor objects and also creating high-quality models for museums for over 20 years. Patina is the art of making objects look old and antique-like. The artist masterfully applies color to objects to create a tarnished look. The whole aim is to build up an old and rustic effect, producing a green or brown film on the surface of the object that seems to have been created over time by oxidation.
This art form is all about finding beauty in the ordinary, paying attention to the smallest of details, and also playing with light and color.
But the art of patina is not just restricted to decor objects. It's also perfect for furniture, such as tables, chairs, bookshelves, and even built-in cabinets. This art form is also used for decorating walls, windows, and ceilings, giving the house an elegant look with traces of time. The art of patina is rooted in history, and its traces go back to ancient Egypt. In the 1920s, patina turned into a professional career, and during the 80s and the 90s, this art form went through a great transformation and became very popular among the artists.
Coins refer to different historical periods in the country, and we all love to have a version of them at home, either in the form of a stand or in the form of jewelry.
Today, students in different fields of study take part in patina courses, mastering the required skills and fulfilling their dreams of creating an antique-like piece of artwork. Learning the art of patina is taming the passage of time, respecting and recreating the depth it imparts to objects. A warm, charming, vintage, and time-worn look that takes you back to the good old days of the past. Odaleski for Iran.
Thank you.
tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed. His decree, though...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip, the tranquility brought about by ubudiyya, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to Allah. Welcome back, dear friends. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the tranquility that comes about via ubudiyya, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. Exalted and glorified is He. So, you know, in the modern era that we live in, we find that stress, anxiety, depression, frustration, anger, all of these vices, unfortunately, are prevalent among society. Now, one of the reasons why these things have become so prevalent among society and have become so prevalent among people is because of the systems that we live in. The systems that we live in, for the most part, they are non-divine systems, and they are systems that are not created or made in order to help an individual grow psychologically and spiritually. Matter of fact, the only reason that these systems, the only purpose of these systems, is that they want to make money, or they want to develop the society again in order to make money, or it is all about power and status and position and these kind of things. And so because these systems are based upon these vices and the ultimate goal is for a certain group of individuals to reach, you know, the peak of a certain vice, for example, greed. So what ends up happening is in order to reach that ultimate peak of that vice, what they end up doing is they end up misusing and mistreating and taking advantage of and abusing the common masses. And so that is why you find that these systems inherently do not care about the psychological or spiritual condition of the people. They could care less, if the people suffer. For them, all that is important is power and money and wealth and, greed and these kind of things. So what that results in, of course, is the common masses being taken advantage of, and that, of course, results in the suffering of the common masses, and that suffering is intimately connected to stress and anxiety and depression and these kind of ills that many people across the world are facing. So I guess if we reverse the equation, it is because we live in societies that the systems are not catered toward humanity. So, for example, the pure Muhammadan Islam, of course, is specifically catered to help the psychological and spiritual growth of every single human being. And so any system that is based upon the pure Muhammadan Islam will and should cater to and help and strengthen and support the psychological and spiritual needs of a human being. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Today's question asks, why do Muslims pray? One of the most important rulings in Islam is the daily prayer that Muslims must partake in. Maybe you have seen Muslims in large groups say prayer together on TV. You might think it looks a little weird because there is so much action involved in prayer. Why don't Muslims just clasp their hands together, become reverent, and speak their prayers silently? Why must there be a loud call to prayer and a set time for these prayers to be said in? This is because Muslims all around the world pray the same prayer in the same way and at the same times. In total, there are 5 separate prayers that Muslims recite in Arabic. This is so that there can be conformity for all prayers said. But the true beauty of the prayer lies in the meaning, and so many Muslims choose to look up the translation of the prayer in their own language so that they truly know what they are reciting. The reason for the actual prayer is so that Muslims always focus on being kind and doing the right thing, no matter the circumstances. In Islam, it is believed that the world is a testing ground for humans, in which they have to always choose for the right over the wrong. It is also believed that humans, after they die and on Judgment Day, will be judged based on their actions on earth. The prayer, therefore, acts as a sort of shield against wrongdoings that might tempt the people. They help remind people that their life on earth is short and serve as a means to put life in perspective. Think of it this way. Let's say you are sitting in an exam at school. Initially, you know that this is an exam and that you have to do your best in order to pass with a good grade. Throughout the exam, however, you also have the teacher supervising you and also a clock to tell you how much more time you have left. The teacher and the clock both reinforce the fact in your mind that you are taking an exam so that you do not slack off, dawdle, or cheat. The Muslim daily prayers serve the same purpose. They allow you to connect with God on several occasions throughout the day. They also help you remember that you are on earth for a short period of time and that you are responsible for your actions at all times. Now imagine during your exam, your teacher would not be there to supervise and there would be no means to tell the time during your exam. Would you still be trying as hard to finish your exam well? Or would you start talking with your classmates, cheat, or even take out your sandwich and indulge because you think you have the time to do so? Without daily prayers, Muslims would have a much harder time focusing on their actual purpose in life. They would not strive to be the best version of themselves that they could be and would indulge in the non-essential things in life. So why not try praying once in a while? Try taking a minute or two, a couple times a day, just to focus on a connection with the Creator.
Welcome back, dear friends. So we were talking a little bit about how ubudiyya, the worship, and the servitude and the obedience to Allah is a source of tranquility. So now when we kind of talked a little bit as a fundamental introduction to the subject by talking about the systems and how they promote stress and anxiety and depression and the ills that are within these categories. Now, we find that the Holy Quran has very beautifully said that the hearts find rest, tatma'in al-qulub, in Allah's remembrance. So this is a very beautiful statement, it's very profound, and this is one of the, you know, curing, miraculous prescriptions before all of the stress and anxiety and depression and anger that human beings across the world are facing. You know, when we look at, for example, the people of Palestine, the people of Palestine in the last 2 years or so have faced an incredibly horrible and atrocious and shocking genocide. And it continues to the present day. You know, in the summers, these poor individuals are dying from the heat. And in the, you know, winter, they are faced with rains and flooding of their tents, incredibly, you know, cold weather while they are living in tents, along with, of course, you know, the basic civilian infrastructure that has been destroyed, basic facilities, basic needs. They are not able to meet those. And, you know, when you look, for example, into the starvation issue, lack of food, lack of fuel, and of course the death and the murder of their loved ones, their parents, their brothers and sisters, their grandparents, their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors, all being killed and murdered, you know, for over 2 years nonstop. When you look at these individuals and you speak with them, one of the things that is very highlighted and it is very prominent is their tranquility. Yes, they are grieving. Yes, they are sad. Yes, they are suffering. Yes, they are facing trials and tribulations beyond imagination. Yes, you know, there are calamities that are befalling them, but still you will see that they have a sort of tranquility. And when you listen to what they say, they will always say, "Praise be to Allah." They will always say, "Allah has the best of protectors, Allah has the best of witnesses, Allah has the best of helpers, Allah has the best of supporters, Allah will take our revenge, Allah will save us." Hence, you see, it is this remembrance that they have and their constant remembrance of the Almighty Allah which has brought them the tranquility to be able to overcome all of the anxiety and stress and depression and trials and tribulations that they are facing. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
تنزل الملائکه و روح روح سوال میکنن روح میگه روح فرشته است که بالاتر از بقیه فرشته است.
The angels and the spirit or ruh descend. They ask about the spirit and ruh. The spirit is an angel who is higher than the other angels, meaning higher than Gabriel, Israel, Michael and other angels. The angels and the spirit descend therein by permission of the Lord for every matter. Their descent is by the permission of their Lord, for every matter means they descend to carry out every affair. The angels descend to carry out every affair. The night of Qadr is a night when man is the link between earth and heaven. Our deeds go to heaven and the angels come to earth. The angels and the spirit descend therein by permission of their Lord for every matter. The angels descend.
از امام صادق پرسیدن روح همون جبرئیله؟ فرمود جبرئیل از ملائکه است.
امام صادق علیه السلام was asked, is this spirit the same as Gabriel? He said, Gabriel is from the angels. The spirit, or a ruh, is superior to the angels. When he recited this verse, he said, the angels and the spirit descend. He mentioned the name spirit, it means the ruh, separately. Things whose names are mentioned separately mean their rank is higher. For example, nusuk means worship. Manasik al-hajj means the rites of hajj. Well, prayer is also a form of worship, but God mentions the name of prayer or salat separately. He says, indeed, my prayer, and then says, and my worship, meaning, O God, my prayer and my worship. Well, prayer is worship, but he mentions the name of prayer separately. You're hosting a gathering. At a gathering where an important personality is present, you say, you, please come. Then you say, so-and-so is also coming. What does this mean? It means they are also a guest, but their status is separate from ordinary guests. Indeed, my prayer. Then I say, and my worship. Here too, it is al-malaika, the angels, but the angels and the spirit, or ruh, descend. The account of the spirit or ruh is really separate. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Greetings from Iran Radio. Here's a quick look at what's still ahead on your favorite station, thoughtfully curated to keep you informed, inspired, and connected. We begin with news. Right after the news, we invite you to listen to Spring of Truth. Next, enjoy a fresh edition of Radio Productions. Then stay tuned for Leader's Speech. Coming up next, news this hour. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A reminder of our top stories. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Israel's legalization of 19 settlements marks a dangerous shift that reduces Palestinian land to colonial spoils. Deadly clashes continue in Thailand and Cambodia border despite claims by the US president that both sides have agreed to halt hostilities. And the US admiral, critical of Washington's boat strikes in Latin America, retires following differences with the administration over the military operations there. Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is news. The Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian teenager in Gaza as the regime continues its artillery and airstrikes in the Palestinian territory in violation of the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. 19-year-old Mohammed Sabri was shot dead by Israeli troops in Jabalia, north of the strip. Meanwhile, the Israeli fighter jets targeted eastern areas of Gaza City. Extensive demolitions of Palestinian houses were also reported east of Khan Yunus. Meanwhile, Rafah City in the south was also targeted multiple times by airstrikes. This is while